Hey, good morning, and welcome to What's the Message? I'm Carmela Monk Crawford, editor of Message Magazine, and I am again flying solo. Claudia, we miss her so much. And you know what? I did believe and declare, and you prayed for her, and she is up and about again, but she is so busy, and she has an amazing, compelling speaking opportunity today. And so we wish her well, but we got to fly solo again today, and I'm glad you're joining us. And if you are, I want you to go ahead, take a moment and share right now, because we have an interesting information packed show today, and I wanted to share with you. I want you to share with other people. Today is Earth Day, and in the midst of everything else that we're dealing with, we want to discuss some important issues as they relate to people of color, the Black community in particular. But before we get to this, we've gone through a very serious week, a week in which we saw accountability for Derek Chauvin in the matter of George Floyd. What a serious culmination of events that was. I don't know if you, like me, you watched everything. You watched as the family members, one by one, came in front of national cameras and said, in front of everybody, look, we prayed for this outcome. We prayed for the intervention of God to bring justice to the situation. And we got to ask ourselves, how did we come to the point when this seemed to be a close call, when up until the last few moments, people were wondering whether or not this verdict would return a conviction for Derek Chauvin. What an amazing time this is, in which you could watch 9.5 minutes of the very causation of someone's death, and then there still be a question. I am glad, many people say, at least the system worked. And so while that may be true, and we have a lot more work to do, obviously the news is filled with information and stories of further unfortunate clashes with police, in which people, mere children, died at the hands of police shootings. You know, Duante Wright was 19, Adam Toledo is 13, and the latest, Micaiah Bryant in Columbus, Ohio, 16 years old, three young people down by police shootings. And so we have a lot more work to do, whether or not it is training in de-escalation, whether or not it's just a wholesale reorientation with the way we look and relate to policing in our communities. This is where we come in. And last week, if you were with us, you will remember that we talked to our good friend, Don Jackson, better known as Diop Kamau. And we talked about some of the things that we need to be doing on a regular basis. And so as we're following these stories and we recognize that there's more work to do, now is the time to make sure that when you watch it, do more than watch. Make sure you take the moment to write out a detailed letter regarding what your expectations are for the police, not only in your community, but in communities around the country. Send that letter via certified mail to the police chief and everyone else that you can copy, and make sure that your voice is on the record. Things have to change. Our young people have to be safe. There's just a lot more work to do. I thought it was interesting. This is the last thing I will say before I bring on our guest. I thought it was very interesting that on my Facebook page, I merely said one word, guilty. And one person decided that they needed to make sure that I knew that we weren't supposed to judge people and that we had to be careful about doing so. And I agree that, I can't make the ultimate determination of anybody's life and their trajectory. But I do know when there has been an offense that there should be justice. I do know that I will not gloat at anybody's downfall or misfortune, but I do believe that as a believer, we believe in accountability, and we all have the right to ask for that, especially in our community. And so, we are, how can we say, I'm grateful that justice was done and that there was accountability in this case and in this space. But today, my friends, this is an interesting Interesting today. Do you know what it is? Today is Earth Day, and you have been watching, I'm sure, much of the coverage surrounding Earth Day. I find that this is very close to our community, and I do not believe always that this side or the relevancy has been tied and linked to communities of color, or that I should say, Black people are in the forefront of the of addressing climate crisis as it affects our community. But that is not the case. There are people both at the forefront of the advocacy and people at the forefront of the impact. Well, one of those people who's at the forefront of the advocacy today comes in the form of Dr. Cedric Jamie Rutland, who's a triple board certified, who is triple board certified in internal medicine, pulmonary, and critical care. Dr. Rutland is one of the national spokespeople for the American Lung Association. We're so grateful that he joined us today. He completed his medical school and an internal medicine residency at the University of Iowa, Carver College of Medicine in Iowa City, Iowa. He moved to Kansas, where he completed his pulmonary and critical care fellowships at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Among other things, Dr. Rutland is an expert in asthma, COPD, and a couple of other acronyms that I don't even know. Dr. Rutland, you're gonna have to help us out with, and an expert in vaping. He serves Orange County, Riverside, California, working for West Coast Lung, and as a national volunteer medical spokesperson for the American Lung Association. He is passionate about community education and speaks frequently about pulmonary diseases. In addition to that, he let us know he made sure he got the kids off this morning. Is a puppy rescuer, sports fanatic, and sneakerhead, self-described sneakerhead. I'm not going to ask to see your sneakers today, but welcome, Dr. Rutland, to What's the Message? We're so happy that you could join us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rutland. Please, can you make the link? We're talking here on Earth Day, mm-hmm. and you being one of the spokespeople for the American Lung Association, make that link for us today. Why do we need to watch what's happening in climate change, and how does that affect our air?
Yeah, you know, when you think about today being Earth Day, what it's really about is about respecting and loving your environment, right? It's about understanding the environment with which you are living. Mm-hmm. And when you look around the environment, sometimes you just don't think about a certain thing. And one of those things that you really just don't think about is you don't think about the breath that you're inhaling. You don't think about what can be in the air. I'm in Southern California, right? And when you look at Southern California, more specifically, when you look at the state of the air, which is what the American Lung Association does every single year. We evaluate what's in the air. I look at Southern California and I can see that Southern California leads the nation in terms of how dirty the air actually is. It has many different types of pollutants in the air, but the ones that we concentrate on are ozone and particulate matter, right? Very, very small particles that once they're inhaled, they can travel all the way down into your lung. And then they can either get directly into your bloodstream or start an inflammatory type of process within your lung. So your lung does not fill itself with air and oxygen molecules. It's full of all of these inflammatory mediators that lead you to have more lung disease.
And that is directly, or, well, I should say, I kind of know the answer to this question. Last year when COVID shut everything down, we started to see clear skies again, even where you are, mm-hmm. notorious area for air pollution. Isn't that right?
We did. We started to see clear skies, which was crazy because I'd been in Southern California for about 4 or 5 years at that point. And then all of a sudden, when everything was shut down, I looked up. I was like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful, right? But again, what it really teaches you is that you really start to learn what's actually in the air, because when you're a young kid, you're taught that ozone is a good thing, right? The ozone layer in the stratosphere. And it is a good thing. It absorbs the ultraviolet light from the sun. But once that ozone starts to get closer and closer to where human beings are living, right? That's when you breathe it in. And that's what directly damages your lung, causes inflammation, causes asthma exacerbations, can cause emphysema, which is dead lung, can lead to you having more lung cancer, and can also increase your mortality, which are all things that are very important. And for our population, when I'm talking about our population, I mean, communities of color, we know that 40% of Americans are in heavily polluted areas, but we also know that out of those 40%, 60% of those Americans are actually Black. And so when you look at these neighborhoods and you look where the Black communities reside and live, those areas are next to freeways. Diesel trucks get to run through those neighborhoods, and it all contributes to the pollution that they're breathing in their lung. And it leads to these higher rates of asthma and asthma exacerbations and things of that sort.
You know, I think this is a very good point, and we're going to talk about this a little later with our next guest as well. But, you know, I think sometimes people feel so far removed. If you're a person who grew up in the suburbs, or you're a person that you this is not your reality, that you're not living in a city area, or you're not living next to a plant, you wonder, why are all these people living next to these plants? Why don't they just move? But what we have learned, and you tell me if I have the history correct, through a history of whether it's redlining or whatever other economic policies, it's not that Black people move next to the plant moved next to them.
Exactly. Yeah. When you think about the redlining and the neighborhoods and the houses that were passed down, you know, the neighborhoods that were within the red lines, they didn't have certain regulations. And so power plants, industrial areas could build on that land. And that led, and freeways could be built through that land. And that led to the neighborhoods that we see today. And so it's something that, you know, we spend a lot of time on. We actually started filming a TV show on this kind of thing. But these are prime examples of what's happened throughout human history that, in all honesty, most people don't know. And sometimes even the people living in those neighborhoods don't even know the history.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, what do you see a difference in the level of disease, or I should say the seriousness of disease for people who are living in these areas? What does that present like when people come to you?
Yeah, you know, it's a complicated question because there are many social dynamics within this arena. So when you think about communities of color, I mean, first of all, there's already a little bit of a lack of trust in medicine. So they're not visiting the doctor as much. So what does that mean? That allows for disease to continue, right? It continues to build on itself, and disease severity can increase almost silently until you develop the physical manifestations of illness. But let's also remember that due to the air pollution in the area with common illnesses like asthma, that's going to make that inflammation that much worse. So when they do physically manifest their symptoms and they end up presenting likely into the emergency room, my ER colleague is going to see someone with a severe asthma exacerbation that needs a whole lot of help, right? Because this inflammation has been ongoing for such a long time and it has not been treated. Therefore, it becomes a lot more difficult to cure, to reverse, and that leads to significantly bad outcomes within our population.
What in the world can anybody do on a personal basis? You know, first of all, as a person who I've never suffered from any kind of breathing complication, but what in the world can a person do against the air in their environment, whether it's inside or outside? Well, how do you take that on?
Yeah, it is, you know, it's something that is very, very difficult to control because it's the air you breathe. But I think there are certain parameters that we give some of these power plants on how much pollution they can actually put in the air. There's certain things that take place between companies buying pollution because some companies don't pollute as much as others and things of that sort. But as far as a human being and what we can do and what we can control, because we're not going to go to the power plant and turn it off, right? We can't just be like, hey, man, it's too dirty out here. Let me just go turn you off real quick. Life doesn't work like that. So the things that you can do, pay attention to the pollution reports, see what the air is like. If the air is unhealthy and you're going to go for a jog, you probably want to stay inside for that jog. You probably want to get on the treadmill or something like that, as opposed to going outside and running. Wearing a mask, again, a lot of people are wearing masks these days because of SARS-CoV-2 spread and the pandemic. That's probably a good thing. When it comes to air pollution, you're not breathing in the heavy concentration of those molecules within your lung because of the barrier of the mask. Again, exercising indoors. I have a gym in my garage. So when I exercise in my gym with the garage door shut. So I do not have those particles running around. There are air purifiers as well that may help with the air, at least inside your house. There's no particular brand that's better than another one. There are certain things that you can control, but as far as what the state needs to do, that's more of a legislation level and more of a policing of the companies that are producing a lot of pollution.
Mm-hmm. Can you say a little bit, you mentioned a moment ago, obviously the respiratory effects or the side effects from COVID, it has hit our community so bad. And we were hearing last year about, people, going on the ventilators. We were hearing about blood clots. We were hearing about so many serious impacts. Can you talk to us a little bit about COVID right now and the implications for our breathing?
Yeah. The way the lung works in general, all right, the lung is a organ that is a bunch of balloons that are stacked on top of one another. And then you have a collection of pipes that lead to these balloons. So when you take a deep breath in, the air travels down your windpipe here. And then it goes into the right and left lung through these pipes that we call bronchioles. And then it leads to these balloons that are stacked on top of one another that we call alveoli. When you blow up a balloon, right, any balloon, say the balloon is red, that color red is the interface between the environments and the inside of your body. That's where your bloodstream is traveling and where your bloodstream picks up oxygen. Now, what ends up happening with air pollution, ozone, is ozone will directly stimulate the cells that make up that balloon or the cells that make up that pipe. And when it stimulates those cells, the cells end up sending out a signal and they recruit over white blood cells. So white blood cells come into those layers, right? The layers of interstitium that surround the pipes and into the balloons. So when white blood cells are congregating in those areas, it can cause asthma if the inflammation is in the pipe. It can cause inflammation in the balloon that we call interstitial lung disease, which is going to prevent oxygen from being able to get into the bloodstream because all the white blood cells are there congregating, oxygen doesn't have a place. Now, moving forward, when you look at SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes the disease COVID-19. The virus ends up binding to those same types of cells. We call them the airway epithelial cells or the type 2 pneumocytes. Once it binds to those cells, it ends up recruiting. That cell ends up sending out molecules and signals that we call cytokines that ends up recruiting a bunch of different white blood cells to that area. So again, you get the collection and congregation of white blood cells in that balloon, which prevents you from breathing. The body overreacts to the presence of that virus. And so because of that viral presence, you get all these white blood cells in the balloons and you can cough and become extremely short of breath. We just don't know who that's going to happen to. Now, I'm going to build on another concept. I told you earlier about Southern California and how bad the air pollution was. When you look at the density of SARS-CoV-2 infection, it follows the density of heavy air pollution. So in the areas that are polluted the most, you saw the most severe SARS-CoV-2 infections and the most severe COVID-19.
So double jeopardy. Double jeopardy. That's not the right usage of the art of the term. But what you're saying is these communities, especially communities of color, Black communities, are in areas with high concentrations of air pollution, already inflammatory reactions within the lungs. Then you get the COVID virus, which attacks the same part of the body.
Correct. And so your body is just overwhelmed with inflammation, or it can happen in those people who are genetically predispositioned to have this significant inflammation. And unfortunately, we don't have good enough monitoring tools at this time to tell you who's going to go into severe respiratory failure and who's not. And that's what makes this so difficult. And that's why air pollution control is important. And that's why the state of the air produced by the Lung Association, you go, if you want to see it, you can go to lung.org and download the state of the air address. That's why this is important. So at least people can understand who's at risk and where the highest risk is.
All right, Dr. Rutten, we're going to let you go in just a second. Before you go, give us some parting words. What else do we need to be doing for our lung health and to contribute positively on Earth Day that can help our communities?
Again, you know, we at the American Lung Association believe in lung health. You can see that on lung.org. But more importantly, there are things that we can control. Don't vape, don't smoke. You don't want to stimulate the inflammatory response, and you don't want to cause chronic damage to your lung that's irreversible. Smoking leads to emphysema. Emphysema is dead lung. Once the lung is gone, it's gone. And no one wants to be that person that walks around carrying the oxygen tank for the rest of their lives. I know it's difficult, especially if it's something that you can control. And smoking and vaping is something that you can control. So again, if you're a teenager, don't vape. If you're an adult, don't vape. Do not smoke at all. No one pick it up. Those are things that will definitely help you in the long run. And pay attention to the air quality when you're going on a jog outside and when you're exercising. And utilize your inside of your house if you can to get your exercise done on days where the air quality is horrible.
Oh, that's excellent. Such good advice and information. I can't express to you how grateful we are that you stopped by today and took time out of your busy schedule. Thank you so much, Dr. Rutten. And I appreciate you coming by.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Oh, man. But this is good information. I don't know where you are right now, whether it's COVID, whether you're taking care of yourself, whatever is happening with you and your family. I hope that you are taking control of that, not just for a community-wide situation and the way you're addressing it, but on your personal way. And so as we say goodbye to Dr. Rutten, Dr. Rutten, you can just leave out if you like, but I thank you so much for dropping by. It was so awesome to have him here. Dr. Cedric Jamie Rutten, you can follow him and you can go on to the National Lung Association as well, where you can also find links for the State of the Air report. And that shows what is happening to communities of color as it relates to Earth Day and some of the things that we can do. As we said, the air pollution exposure can worsen the outcomes for people with COVID. And so as we have seen, this has been very important to the Black community to get a hold of and to understand what is happening and what are the direct links between what is happening overall in our environment and how it translates into our personal lives, into our personal health. So just more on the whole Earth Day today. And here I am. I'm trying to fly by the seat of my pants, as you know, with not having Claudia here, whom I miss so much. But what we want to do today is shift a little bit and talk to our next guest, Elizabeth Lee. Elizabeth Chun-He Lee, who is so gracious also to join us today. Elizabeth Lee is the climate justice lead for the United Methodist Women. And she is a mother and a firm believer that caring for the environment is a biblical imperative for people of faith. She has led energy or just energy for all. That campaign for the United Methodist Women for years. And the campaign urges action on climate justice, an equitable transition to clean energy, and centering the needs of frontline communities, which are more likely to be poor and people of color. So I want to bring on Ms. Elizabeth Lee today. Thank you so much for joining us. And I feel like I'm in the big time to be able to talk to these experts in this area that we don't talk about that much. How long have you been working, number one, as the Climate Justice League for the United Methodist Women?
Carmela, first of all, thank you so much for having me here representing United Methodist Women to be with you all. And as you had said even earlier in your opening remarks, just acknowledging the verdicts that have happened and the ongoing murders of Black, sacred Black lives. So as an Asian American, I'm in solidarity standing with you, who has benefited tremendously from the civil rights work and the movement, and just praying ongoing and demanding justice. So just wanted to acknowledge that. And United Methodist Women also works on racial justice as one of our issues, ending mass incarceration of communities of color and the profiling and extrajudicial killings of Black lives and bodies. So wanted to just note that, because that's the reality.
We stand with you, Elizabeth. This is the way, that's the way the work goes. And that's the way I believe as God's people, that's the way we are supposed to be. We have to care about what other people are experiencing. And we have seen what has been happening to members of the Asian community as well. It just makes no sense, but we're here together.
Amen. Amen. For liberation of all. And so with United Methodist Women, I've actually been in this role for about 4.5 years working on this. So just a little bit about my background. Mm-hmm. Before, actually, I was working on more human rights work, mm-hmm. gender justice, had done political science undergrad, et cetera. Was working on human rights, justice, had a crisis of faith, went to seminary, and was working at the UN with the World Council of Churches. Advocacy on climate displacements, women's rights, migration, indigenous people's rights, human rights. And it became very evident that if we wanted to address any of these human rights violations, we needed to address the climate crisis. Because communities of color in the United States, low wealth communities, women around the world are being disproportionately impacted by the climate crisis. So I could be working on reducing gender-based violence, but when there is increase in displacement, and the UN has noted that 80% of those being displaced are women, which leads to increase in violence towards women because of climate displacement and climate crisis. If we don't address the root cause, which is the climate crisis, and the source of climate crisis, which is fossil fuel emissions, which is the main source of air pollution, that the doctor was speaking about, we were just putting band-aids on, essentially. So that's kind of how I moved into the climate justice arena, recognizing that it's a human rights issue, it's a racial justice issue, it's a gender justice issue, and most of all, that we as people of faith are mm-hmm. called very clearly in scripture to care for God's creation. And sometimes the faith community is not as prominent in these spaces. Mm-hmm. So wanted to contribute in that way. So
that's my goodness. Well, before we get to some of the faith foundation, I would love to hear more. Maybe you can help me connect the dots even better. What you just laid out as an overview of, you know, how you got into this, you know, you are zeroing in on climate change and climate crises as, you know, sort of the impetus for so many other problems. Help us connect the dots more. What is it about the use of fossil fuels or the overuse of fossil fuels? What is it about air pollution and those changes that make people have to move so much, thereby causing some instability in their existence?
Absolutely. So in terms of planet warming, greenhouse gas emissions, the primary source of that is the fossil fuels you and I use on a daily basis, from the tea that I, you know, warmed up to the Zoom call or Facebook Live that we're using, right? In the United States, it's 80% of our energy comes from fossil fuels. And so that emission is warming the planet, and in the process is disrupting life as it is, right? Mm-hmm. With sea levels rising, with communities being displaced, often countries that are least responsible, right? Having to pay the burden of our use, especially in the United States. Mm-hmm. We use more than anyone else in the world. And with that overuse and warming, it's leading to increase in drought. And many may not realize that women tend to be the primary agriculturalists, right, at the local level. Mm. And so when there's an increase in drought, what does that happen? What does that mean? Women, girls, children are more impacted then. When there's increase in drought, then women have to walk further to get the water, right? Mm. To get water and resources. And I think about the tsunami in 2004, that Oxfam study had noted that women were less likely to survive than men by 3-1. And part of this was that women were less likely able to swim. And then also they took precious time in terms of caring for their children. Or think about Hurricane Katrina, mm-hmm. and those who were left, right? Even in terms of the disaster with Hurricane Katrina, FEMA and the disaster response, they didn't prepare for the realities that not everyone could afford petrol or gasoline, right, to mm-hmm. leave. And communities of color, Black communities were left, right, unable to leave. It's not that they didn't want to leave, but the resources, right, the disaster preparedness had not thought about was in terms of the racial justice realities, mm-hmm. right? So then women were those who were left. And then even in terms of the rebuilding of Katrina, Black women had fewer job opportunities as well. So in terms of you have the climate crisis, disasters are happening, in adaptation, resilience, and how to prepare. It's not putting in the reality that in the United States, we have systemic racism through and through in our policies. Mm-hmm. And so how do we address that? And it's about exposing the realities of that and saying that there needs to be equity in terms of disaster response, equity mm-hmm. in terms of how do we do mitigation as well, equity in terms of our, as President Biden was speaking, had lifted up with the American Jobs Plan, in infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's greater crumbling infrastructure because the funding has often not been directed towards low wealth communities and Black, Indigenous, people of color communities.
Well, you make an interesting point. The Washington Post had an article today regarding the climate crisis and the impact on communities of color. And for so long, the last thing that you were talking about, you know, the money has not been put there, directed to these our communities. And for so long, the climate advocates are viewed as, you know, people who care about, you know, the mountains and the trees and the forests and the sea and the animals, whereas the real-time impact for people of color, women and children, men, families of color, there's a real-time impact here, but the people that we see and think of as environmentalists are white, they have money, they have land. This is a different face. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And if we even look at, unfortunately, society and those in power reflect the racial structures and suppression and oppression that exist, right? So just because environmental green groups does not mean they are committed to racial justice historically, right? And I think there's shifts and changes. And we could think about just how protection of parks, right, and how it pushed out Indigenous rights, Indigenous communities, right? And mm-hmm. so there is a centering of white communities more. And I think there's been a shift within environmental groups, and mm-hmm. there's been an increase in awareness that those who need to be heard and need to be in leadership are the environmental justice communities that are being directly impacted. So I think about Reverend Michael Malcolm with the People Justice Council, mm-hmm. with Moms Clean Air Force, who are leaders in that and NAACP with Jackie Patterson and others leading that work in really making those connections of who is being disproportionately harmed. It's not only the polar bears, it's actually humans that are being impacted. And of course, as a doctor was saying earlier, that there is pollution inequity that exists, right? Mm-hmm. That communities of color are disproportionately impacted by the air pollution. And that there was a study that came out recently that said that there's the pollution inequity, that pollution is disproportionately caused by white communities, but disproportionately inhaled by Black and Hispanic communities.
Wow.
So this is a justice issue as people of faith, right? Yeah. Of how do we ensure equity? How do we ensure that all lives, all our lungs, regardless of race, can breathe, and we can praise God? And, you know, God gives us that breath that is so sacred and that is being harmed. So I'm in agreement with you. And I think it's about, like you're doing, right, having these conversations. And my hope is that more and more faith communities, Black faith communities will speak, and they are doing it. And I think the important thing is that media needs to pay more attention, and government needs to pay more attention to those being impacted and not necessarily the policy experts or the environmental green groups, right?
Oh my goodness, Liz, the more you talk, you don't mind if I call you Liz, right?
Of course.
The more you talk, I'm thinking to myself, the more she's going to be stuck with me, because I'm going to be talking to you over and over again. You're such a wealth of knowledge on this. But talk to me then about the faith impact of this. That here again, in my mind, what we see on in the media, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but sort of a perception that, you know, Christians don't see this as central to their work. Maybe because of people's perception of, you know, one day this will all go the way of all things, earth will. But what is it that spurs you on from a biblical perspective in this work?
Yes, and thank you for asking that. I think often the Christian community is misunderstood by majority culture and media. And sometimes we don't also share what is most important and recorrect. For me, the one with the greatest green thumb is God, God's self, right? We think about Genesis. In the beginning, God created. And it wasn't that humans were good alone. God said creation was good before humans were created, right? So just that God delights in creation, all of creation, the cosmos, right? And just affirming that. And I want to go to the most famous passage, right? The Gideon Bible says that has been translated, the most in all languages or as many languages as they can, is John 3:16.
Mm-hmm.
So John 3:16 says, for God so loved humans? For God so loved me? No. The Greek is actually kosmon from kosmos, which is the world, everything in it, the firmaments. Think about cosmology. So John 3:16, for God so loved cosmos, the world, all that it's in it, that God gave God's only son. And so it's this deep love that God had. And then most of us, I didn't have to memorize John 3:17, but John 3:17 says, for God did not come to condemn the world, but to save the world. And so the word save is really interesting, because in the Greek, it's from sozo, and it not only can be translated save, but it also can be translated as heal, to restore, to bring back into wellness. So it's this deep love that God has for all of creation that God declared good in Genesis, that we see in Colossians, in John 1. I mean, it's throughout scripture. If we start looking for it, it's so apparent that God's love is so deep and vast, and God's purpose for Jesus was to bring restoration, healing, not for only humans, right? That salvific message we're talking about, salvific message for the entirety of creation. So that means if I am a follower of Jesus, like the Great Commission says, right, do as what Christ did, then I have to care for its creation, with the air, with one another as well. So that's what grounds me and motivates me.
Amazing. I don't understand why there is also this false conflict between faith and science. Can you be a creationist and care about God's earth and still want to take care of everything? I don't understand why that's an issue. Maybe you can shed light on that.
I would agree. I think science is speaking about facts. Mm-hmm. Faith is what God calls us to. There is not a conflict there. And so in creation, whether one is a creationist, you know, whatever views that folks have and how we read scripture, I think it's very evident in terms of this new creation that God is calling is one about this restorative element, right? Mm-hmm. Like our own salvation, that I, when I become saved, become new and mm-hmm. created and renewed. And that is that deeper call for creation as a whole. And we're supposed to participate in that. And this, there's the science is, and the evidence of the climate crisis is happening is real. And the urgent call is for that we do not move above a 1.5 degrees Celsius increase in global warming and temperatures. And today, the Biden administration actually released additional nationally determined contributions, right, in line with the Paris Agreement. And they're having their Earth Summit right now. And for us as women of faith, as United Methodist women, we want to urge that is a good step. We need to do more. They basically said we need to go to 50%, you know, half our emissions. And from faith communities, from environmental justice and other communities, there's been a call actually for US, 4% of the world's population, 25% of global contributions. So I get right. Mm-hmm. We're only 4%.
Yes.
25% of emissions. That means we have to do what is known as our US fair share.
Fair share.
What is our fair share? And our fair share means that it is 70% emissions reduction by 2030, not 50, 70% emissions reduction. That means we need to electrify electrify our energy, phase out of fossil fuels, and not rely on unhealthy energy sources, environmental justice, and polluting sources like nuclear or biomass, which has historically been cited in where? Black communities.
Yeah.
Unsurprising, right? Because again, the racial bias that exists, even with the citing in companies, right? Who will not resist, et cetera? Who have political power? Mm-hmm. So I think this is the ongoing work we have to do when we care for God's creation. It's taking seriously the science and using our minds and seeing the realities and speaking truth to power.
This is such a daunting prospect, Liz. I mean, when you're talking about remediation, number one, especially in so many of our communities, we think of Flint because of the decisions that were made, the water supply has been such a damaging factor for the lives and the development of children. And we think about the remediation and the cleanup that has to go through there, not just making sure that people have good water, but that there is some kind of redress for the people who have been affected. We think about places where there has been either dumping or seepage or toxic exposure. There's so much that we have to do just to put the things back. It is hard to think of, you know, about going forward about what to do. What are you saying to people in terms of, as you organize, let this be your priority?
Yes, absolutely. It's, I think, a both and situation. Mm-hmm. That our elected officials, policymakers, and decision makers need to hear about our reality in our communities, and we frame the narrative, right, versus industry saying, no, communities really want this, you know, or no, this is good for them, right? Mm-hmm. This paternalistic approach, right? So we claim our agency, and I am encouraged and challenged often by the passage of the widow and the unjust judge.
Come on, say it.
Sometimes it could feel so overwhelming, but the widow did not have power in her context, right? She's a woman, she's a widow. All of those things in her context meant that she had very little power, but she knew she had the right cause, right? What God was calling her to. And so she again persisted and pestered the unjust judge, so much so that the unjust judge said, because of your persistence, not mm-hmm. because it is right, of your persistence, I will grant you justice.
Yes.
Right? And so I think it is recognizing that the work that we do is not easy, that it will not be one letter writing activity or one call, mm-hmm. but it is that persistence and that the Holy Spirit is the one that guides us, sustains us, that helps our cup overflow. It is that call. And then from there, we make those links, right? There are racial justice issues that are happening in our country that's directly related to environmental justice, water, air pollution, and especially around fossil fuels, which is the source of greenhouse gas emissions. If we're actually able to move our fossil fuels, right, as the doctor was saying, from tailpipe emissions, the cars that are being driven, the trucks, the buses that are often those highways are located and busy streets are in communities of color. Mm-hmm. If we electrify that, then the air is cleaner. It actually makes our own health cleaner. So that's the connection, right? Mm-hmm. African-American communities being directly impacted with higher rates of asthma and death, hospitalization, all of those things. It's directly impacting us and seeing that connection. And if we're moving towards 100% renewable energy, like wind and solar, mm-hmm. it will make the air cleaner, our health cleaner, the environment cleaner, reduce climate crisis as well. So I think that's why for me, it's connected on so many different levels, mm-hmm. So much so that the Secretary General of the United Nations said, the greatest systemic threat to humanity is not nuclear war, famine, right? Trade, but it's climate change because it's a cross-cutting issue.
And so many layered, layers involved in that. I read about a neighborhood called Cancer Alley, where there's just so much exposure because of the petroleum companies. Yes. And that's a neighborhood where Black people live called Cancer Alley. Exactly. And so, you know, it's not Maple Street anymore. I want you in these few moments that we have left, I'm looking at the picture behind you on your screen. Tell us about your organization. I'm looking there, I'm seeing all these women here who you can just tell they're about the cause. Talk to us about, you know, how big your organization is, what some of the strategies you employ, you know, how do you all work? And maybe you can share before you go, you know, a great story about, you know, one of your successes in terms of being that persistent widow.
Yeah, thank you. So this picture behind me is our last training that we did, an event on just energy for all, right? Because if we're going to address the climate crisis, recognizing fossil fuels the main contributor to air pollution, to the climate crisis, we want just energy. And so we actually partnered with the NAACP. This was in Springfield, Illinois, where mm-hmm. NAACP was founded. We examined as women of faith, right? Where is God's call for us? And for such a time as this, recognizing the realities that it's having in the world, in our own communities and communities of color and women, children, and youth, how do we move forward? Mm-hmm. And so United Methodist Women is about an 800,000 member women's faith-based organization connected to the United Methodist Church, but separate. Mm-hmm. And so we have members who are not all United Methodist, some units that meet in churches, prisons, they vary, right? And yeah. So our focus has been, we want to address the climate crisis, just energy for all. And part of that has been doing deeper education about, well, how is it impacting my health? So we have a worksheet that we've encouraged members to look at, actually the ALA, mm-hmm. the American Lung Association's State of the Air. What's happening in your particular county, right? Who is being harmed? And then looking at how is my own United Methodist Women's group being impacted? Mm-hmm. Right? What about communities of color in my community? And then understanding that, saying, now, as a values principle, you know, what is a value I hold? Mm-hmm. Is this our current energy system, is this in line with what God calls us to? And often the answer is no.
Yeah.
And so then what is God calling us to do? So we've been doing state level advocacy, local, federal, it's varied. But the most important thing for us is that we do not do it alone.
Mm.
Right? It gets so discouraging when I feel like, woe is me, just me, you know, that prophet alone. But like Elijah, right? There mm-hmm. were prophets that were present that we do not know of. But in this case, with social media and smartphones, yeah. we can connect. And so UMW intentionally partners with frontline environmental justice communities. So even with our members, those who are impacted most, then we center their voices, their realities, right? And mm-hmm. envision what that future would look like. So we're not just talking about, we want 100% renewable energy at all cost.
Right.
You know? And so, but frontline communities, communities of color, you know, the air pollution will, the nuclear waste will be in their location, but because it reduces climate, you know, greenhouse gas emissions, we're okay with it. We're saying no way. Mm-mm. God calls us to something of wholeness and healing for all of us. So we focused on the school bus campaign with Green for All, which is basically saying that 22.5 million children, about 90% of all children in the United States, ride school buses that are diesel run. Diesel buses, children right. who ride them are exposed to 5 to 15 times more air pollutants than the average person. Right. right? And so children, our own children, mm-hmm. Are being harmed, and that leads to a class performance as well, right? And class absences. And again, who is that disproportionately harming? Communities of color and children of color. So it's making those connections personal mm-hmm. and saying we are fighting. You asked for an example. We did a letter writing campaign with Chevron.
Okay.
And some of the green groups had said, oh, Chevron won't meet with you. You know, we've tried to meet with them. They're not going to listen. We're women of faith. We're embedded in the community, right? So we started this letter writing campaign urging Chevron to reduce their methane emissions, right? Which is one of the greenhouse gas emissions. And they actually met with us.
Wow.
And one of our members was actually, her daughter worked at Chevron. Her daughter then called the head of Chevron and said, you know, my mom, Faith Group, is saying that, like, you know, we're having problems and Exxon is even better than us, right? So we're making the fossil fuels compete amongst themselves and trying mm-hmm. to be more green. And so the CEO was like, yeah, your mom is right. We have been doing more poorly, but just you should let her know that we just signed on to some methane emissions reduction targets, right, internally. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I think faith groups have a really compelling message. You know, groups and others, policymakers, companies sometimes think, oh, the tree huggers, right. them environmental groups. Faith communities are embedded. They are the center in many of our communities. And so when we speak and when we organize, there's possibility in that change. Now, we don't speak for ourselves alone, mm-hmm. but we acknowledge that we are part of this wider movement that God is calling us to in terms of caring for God's creation.
Oh, this is so good. And like I said, you're stuck with me now, Liz. Now that I know you.
In the space with you.
Now that I know, I want to come alongside. I want to help. And I want everybody else to help. The people who are watching now or who will watch on the playback back later, they need to know how they can get involved and how they can either follow you on social media or whatever other resource that you have. Why don't you share with us how we can get involved and get engaged?
Yes, sure. One thing, just as the doctor was saying with the American Lung Association, they have the state of the air.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that and look, type in your zip code and find out how the particulate matter is actually impacting your own community. You may be shocked. So mm-hmm. for instance, I live in an area level F in terms of ozone pollution, right? So my family is just inhaling all these toxins.
Mm.
So that should cause me some concern and motivate me. So I think one is to know the issues. Two, connect with other groups that are doing the work. You can type in environmental justice in your town or state. Mm. There are many EJ groups that are doing incredible work, and they have the resources at the local level and the knowledge. So connect with those. The NAACP, their environmental and justice program, great mm-hmm. resources at the local, state, and their conferences and chapters that they have. And then there's faith organizations like ours and many that are coming together saying that this is not right. So we would love to partner with you in joining together and lifting up our voice as people of faith. So you can check our website, unitedmethodistwoman.org/climatejustice. Earlier, Carmela, you had spoken about Cancer Alley. Yeah. We partner with Creation Justice Ministries, which is a collection of many denominations and faith groups, and they produce the Earth Day Sunday resource. Mm-hmm. And actually, the focus this year is precisely on Cancer Alley, connecting climate justice and environmental justice and how we move forward. So that resource, creationjustice.org/newheaven is a resource that people may want to look into. We are in this together.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And you know, I think you've done such an excellent job at showing the universality of this interest and concern, or what should be our interest and concern, and reminding us, even though, you know, we take for granted and we're going back and forth and we have the freedom to roam and do what we want to do, everybody doesn't have that. And because of our choices, there are people around the world who have to move their families. They have to go somewhere where they can find the right conditions to protect their families and just to live. And we have to make those changes and those choices as part of our responsible management of the planet until he comes back. And so I sure do appreciate you giving us the information today, Liz. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for your ongoing ministry and being intentional about caring for God's creation and making that a salient priority for all of us.
Well, it should be, and we're going to move forward. We're going to keep doing it. Thanks for watching today. What's the message? I want to remind you, you can go to messagemagazine.com where you can subscribe to our print edition as well as our new digital edition, and join us every week here 11 o'clock Eastern for What's the Message. I pray that Claudia will be back next week. But until then, praise God. Thank you for joining us today. And I thank all of our guests. Make it great. Take care.